Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It is the Rappahannock Area Health District in this morning to talk about a bunch of stuff. It's been a while, Allison Balmas, John. But it's good to see you again.
It's great to see you.
It just occurred to me when this spring, when the anniversary of COVID hit, that that's where we became acquainted with one another, and we became really well acquainted. It doesn't seem like it's been 5 years, though.
No, it simultaneously feels like it's went really fast and also really slow at the same time.
Yeah. No, that was just such an interesting time, but really a time that the health district really the health district just really shined through that whole everything.
Well, thank you for saying that. It was certainly a bit of a rough time, and there was some growing pains. But I think, you know, looking back, to me, COVID was really a time where we all learned about the importance of health, and that if our health becomes destabilized, everything else kind of crumbled. And so there's really, I think, good motivation to protect that. Yeah. And that applies to a lot of other things that we do.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about a whole lot of other things that you do this morning. And also joining you this morning is Jaleesa Turner.
Good morning.
Jaleesa, welcome. I have never met you, and we need to know a little bit about you.
Yes. So I've been with the Rappahannock Area Health District for about 5 months now, since January, and I am their public relations and marketing specialist, and I'm just happy to be on board working with this health district. I came from the central office, so I was working in Richmond for a bit prior to this, and working on a local level has been so rewarding. I've loved it, and I live here. I'm a Fredericksburg resident. I've been here for about 8 years now, and so it's great to just be out here in the community working for you guys.
I'm sure it is different when you go from being like in a central place like in Richmond to come to now a local community dealing with just the local issues.
Absolutely. And working from the central office definitely was a lot more on a broader scope, working with all 35 local health districts. And so to really kind of put, it's almost putting a face to a name when you go to the local health districts and kind of being boots on the ground. And so that's just been, it's been really great to see it from this perspective. Absolutely.
Working in health and healthcare and that kind of thing, is that's something that you've wanted to do?
Yeah, I have a background in public health. I've got my master's in public health now, and I have been working in healthcare on the clinical side since I graduated high school. I was able to kind of do a medical careers program back then, which was a really great start for me, and I've been in public health and healthcare ever since.
Well, welcome. Looking forward to see you coming here in and out various times with things. It's great to meet you, and great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Allison, this may have been the last time I saw you a few years ago talking about the community health assessment. That is a big deal.
It is a big deal. I hope it hasn't been that long.
It probably hasn't. I may be exaggerating.
That's okay.
Slightly.
The community health assessment is something that we do every 3 years, and we really try to make it a pretty comprehensive deep dive into what community health looks like. So this doesn't necessarily mean what an individual's health looks like. We're kind of looking at patterns that we're seeing in the population as a whole. And we do this, the Rappahannock Area Health District does this in partnership with Mary Washington Healthcare, but we get a ton of other organizations on board. And I feel like we're really unique in our area in the interest that, you know, a lot of different nonprofits and government entities have to really work together to address these complex issues. And that's really what this process is all about.
This was either, I think it was right after COVID when you did probably the last one, and that was there was really a lot of interest in that, and I think since then there was interest this time. I had a number of nonprofits come through here that talked about looking forward to what this was going to yield.
Yeah, it was so interesting because last time we did this, it started in 2021 and we finished it in 2022, and so, you know, we were still kind of in the midst of COVID at that point. I think people, you know, think of it as a 2020 thing, but really in 2021, like, schools were still closing, things were still really up in the air. And so we could hear from people about their needs related to COVID, but we couldn't see that yet in some of what we call the secondary data sources. So, like, census data wasn't showing anything that happened during COVID, any of the movement of people that happened. And CDC data was, you know, we could see really up-to-date COVID data, but we couldn't see, like, how that was impacting mental health on that like broader, more systematic scale. So this time we were able to see that, which was really exciting to be able to reflect. I'll also say when we were last doing this, we were like, well, you know, it's end of COVID, things are crazy. Next time we do this, things are going to be super calm. And of course, 2025 has been kind of a crazy year,
yes,
too.
Yes, it has. So. Right. It's, yeah, so I guess every time we do this, you can sort of, but it really is, this is one of the things, and you know, in a lot of times when you hear local governments or organizations do these kinds of surveys, they get done and then they get put on a shelf. This is one totally different. From the last one to this one, the last one has been talked about, at least from the people that come through here, has been talked about a lot. It's kind of a blueprint and kind of gives you a direction.
Yeah, and that's really the goal. You know, we look at this as we want our role to kind of be the chief health strategist, and part of that is looking at the data. But you know, we say we're the chief health strategist because we don't necessarily have enough people to do all the services we'd want to provide. We can't be your primary care provider, but we want to be an organization that has a good pulse on what's happening in the community and can help, you know, bring folks together to, as I said before, like address these pretty complicated issues and start to nudge the needle and hopefully improve people's lives.
Well, and that's like we went to go back into COVID. We really saw that. I mean, you were the ones that really organized and were able to put a lot of things together and kind of unite the community on here's where you can do this, here's where you can do that, here's what's going on kind of thing during COVID.
Yeah. That's really a role I think we've tried to step into in the last few years.
Well, we're going to take a break and come back and talk about some of the what you found and then what's going to happen next. Allison Balmes-John and Jaleesa Turner from the Rappahannock Area Health District in this morning. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Jaleesa and Allison from Rappahannock Area Health District in this morning to talk about a whole bunch of things. The community health assessment right now, our focus. Allison Balmes-John is here, and as far as talk first of all how you gathered the results, because it was pretty comprehensive of how you pulled this off.
Yeah, we try to be really comprehensive, and we use a few different types of data in order to do that. So we did a series of focus groups, so kind of had conversations with people, asked them questions about what they're seeing related to health. We did a community survey, which folks may have seen, just really brief, kind of asking about what their biggest health concerns are. We did a pretty comprehensive review of as I said earlier, like CDC data, census data, data from VDH, Virginia Department of Health, and then this time, we were able to use Mary Washington Healthcare's social determinant of health data, which was super cool. This was some questions that they asked of every adult inpatient in 2024. And so they asked them, like, in the last year, have you had issues related to your housing or your transportation or your food? And so we were able to take a look at that and then get a better understanding of, like, down to the census tract level, what are some of these pockets where maybe people are experiencing more food needs or experiencing more transportation needs, so that hopefully we can drive some resources there and help address that. And the reason we're looking at things like that is really those are really closely tied to your health. Like, if you don't have transportation to get to your medical appointments, obviously that could impact your health. But also, if you can't get to the grocery store, like, all these things are really interrelated. Yeah. So we were excited to be able to include that data this time as well. And then what we were really looking at is all these data have things that are really strong about them, and then also things that are a little bit weak. Like, nothing's perfect. You know, people we talk to in focus groups can have great insights, but, you know, we're only able to talk to so many people. We can't talk to all 400,000 people we serve. So we're looking at points of overlap between those data sets, and we definitely saw some. So I can certainly dig into those, but perfect. So some of the key issues that we heard about this time in the community health assessment, and these are just alphabetical, like no preference to one or another, but we heard a lot from folks about aging-related concerns, and I think this is right in line with, like, demographic shifts that we're hearing about as, you know, boomer population is getting older, our population is just aging in general.
Sure.
But a lot of concerns people brought up related to isolation and loneliness, especially for older adults. Somewhat related to that, maybe. We see really high suicide rates among our 65 and up population, so that really came up.
That's interesting, because you don't often think about that or hear about it. We talk about it with teens all the time, yeah, but never an older population.
Yeah, all the time. And it is actually, like, when you look at the graph, which is in the report if there's any data nerds out there, but, like, the bar graph doesn't look as high for 65 and up, but you have to remember that's a smaller chunk of our population,
yeah,
because not everybody lives to be 65. So the rate itself is much higher, but also higher rates of chronic conditions, you know, and folks talk to us about they want to be able to age in place. Maybe they're trying to find resources for that. And the communication challenges came up a lot, especially, you know, we don't always think about people 65 and up as super internet savvy. And so the more we shift to putting everything on a QR code or, you know, on our website or on social media, people can't always find it. And so that can be a challenge for this group. So
oh,
that came
that's
up
interesting.
Too. Yeah.
That's interesting. It's got to be kind of a, it's got to be kind of an eye opener for you all, because everybody, you just assume.
Yeah.
Go to our Facebook page.
Right.
Go to our website.
Right.
And
yeah. Or the
yeah.
QR codes
the
really
QR,
stood
yes.
out to me, because we're like, these are so easy, these are great. But if you don't have a smartphone, you actually can't access it.
No, and I was somewhere where there was a QR code, and so I'm getting it, and some of the people next to me had no clue.
No idea.
They had no, they were putting their, just putting their phone up, and so
yeah.
I showed them how to do it, but...
Yeah.
Somebody like Jaleesa, for you in communications, that would be something.
Yeah, finding creative ways to, you know, reach the entire population as opposed to just those that are technologically savvy. Because that, you're right, the QR code is, I even still have trouble. Sometimes it won't pop up on your phone when you're pushing the button.
Yeah.
So, you know, just capturing that whole population.
Yeah. So I think a good example of, like, that's a small change that I think we can all do a better of, you know, better job of keeping in mind. Sometimes we need printed copies of things.
I was just going to say that. So, sometimes, yeah, people like to get that.
Yeah.
And because if you don't have a way, or you don't have, a lot of times people don't have, or you look at the cell phone they have, and it's a flip phone
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of one thing we heard, aging-related concerns. Behavioral health, which is kind of a term that includes mental health and substance use, came up a lot. Mental health, again, and this was the same as the last time we did this, mental health was the top concern we heard on our survey about people's biggest health concerns. And people also talked about things like bullying, you know, isolation, which we already kind of talked about, drug and alcohol misuse. And then I think really notably, our depression rates, and this is where we talk about being able to look at that data during COVID, but our depression rates went up by quite a bit from 2019 to 2022. And it was kind of a steady increase. It wasn't like just in 2020, everybody was stuck at home.
Yeah.
But they increased by about 5% for our whole population, which is pretty substantial. So that was definitely something that stood out to us there. We looked at things like overdose numbers. Those have, for our area, they've come down a little bit. That's, I think, been in the news Virginia-wide, but
yeah.
I think it is good for folks to know. They have started to trend in the direction we want to see, at least. Still higher than they were, you know, 10 years ago, but that was a positive that at least those have started to come down.
Well, and that's something that the health district has focused on in recent years, in providing training
yep.
and even just some different ways to deal with it.
Yeah, lots of focus on especially like getting naloxone out into the community for
yeah.
Dealing with opioid response and things like that. So really promising to see that hopefully the tide is turning a little bit there on some of those things. I'll keep going through my
yeah.
list, but you can interrupt me with questions. Healthcare access and utilization came up a lot. We have a big population and we don't have a lot of providers relative to that population. And people talked about, you know, we can see that in the numbers, but people talked about seeing that with, you know, they have a long wait time to see a provider. If you don't have a primary care provider, it can be really hard to find one. So,
boy, it is difficult.
Yeah.
I hear that all the time.
Yeah. And even like we've done some work in the past just kind of calling and finding out what the wait time was. And I remember one provider we called over a year ago and we're like, are you taking new patients? And they're like, we are in 2026. And this was in 2024. And I was like, 2026? Nobody can schedule an appointment in a year and a half out? Like,
right.
I can barely keep my dentist appointment 6 months out.
Right. No, and I've been told with different times, you'll see the doctor for the first time, but then his follow-up appointments, they're booked for the year,
yeah.
So you'll see an assistant from now on.
Yeah,
and yeah, that I mean that does really come into play. But yeah, if you move into this area and try to find a primary care doctor,
yeah,
it can be
yeah.
difficult.
Yeah, it's really tough. So yeah, so we were looking at things like that and that access to care just kind of remains an issue, especially for some populations. And, you know, it was interesting to see there's differences in different communities. Like, dental concerns and finding a dentist didn't come up when we look at our population as a whole, but when we looked at our responses that were from, that identified as Hispanic or Latino and that were low income, dental concerns was like their number one. And so then that's like, oh, well, what's happening here that some folks, you know, were good and others are really struggling with this. When we know at the health department, even if you don't have insurance, there's a lot of providers that do some like sliding scale kind of work.
Yep.
So, you know, kind of gets us at the point of this, which is like, how can we start to address these issues, make the right connections, that sort of thing. And then last two things I'll talk about are physical activity and healthy eating. They came up a lot. Our obesity rates were another thing that increased quite a bit in the time frame we were looking at here. There's a couple chronic diseases that we see at pretty high rates, like high blood pressure across our area is pretty high. I kind of, when I saw that, I was like, I just picture everybody like white knuckling it on 95 and their blood pressure just skyrocketing.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's what it is, but it was like a notable trend that we see in this area. And then in terms of, you know, those social determinants of health that I was talking about, housing really came up again. You know, about a quarter of households in our area are paying more than 30% of their income on their housing. People on the survey told us housing is what would most improve their health. And then, of course, you know, we've all seen that housing prices have just gone way up.
Everywhere.
Everywhere, but definitely here.
It always used to be, if it's too, if you can't find a place here, you can't in Caroline or King George. And now the Caroline numbers are right up there.
Yeah, I mean, they're still the most affordable numbers in our area, but it's been big increases across the board. So
I remember that housing, when the last one came up, and was a really high one, and that kind of caught everybody by surprise, because you didn't think of it, about that in terms of this survey, and it really did kind of change thinking about how that would fit into all of this.
Yeah, I mean, it changed. It was a surprise to me included, because, you know, that's not necessarily our comfort zone at the health department of what we talk about.
Yeah.
Since then, we've really, you know, tried to get a better understanding of, like, what are the linkages between housing and health that we're seeing. And that can be a few different things. Like, if you're spending 50% of your income on your housing, you just don't have a lot of income left for other things that will benefit your health. But also, like, if you're home is having issues related to mold, or you have a leak in your roof, or you need a ramp to get in. Like, all those factors can impact it. And then, like, your neighborhood setting itself. Like, do you have sidewalks? Is there a lot of crime in your area? All of those things can be really tied up in your health as well. So that did come up again, and that is, again, our priorities for the Community Health Improvement Plan, which is kind of phase two of this, are very similar to last time, and housing is one of those, along with behavioral health and access to health care.
So what happens next now? The survey is in, and I guess now, again, it's the implementation.
Yep, yeah. So full community health assessment is available on our website. It is lengthy, but if you like data, I think it's worth a read. We did do a kind of executive summary that's there as well this time. Mm-hmm. And then if you serve, like, a specific locality, like, you really only want to look at what's happening in Stafford County, we did some, like, abbreviated versions of those as well. So just a little plug for what's available there. But I will say, our goal of this is not just to point out all the problems and then be like, good luck. We want to be part of the solution. And so that's really where the Community Health Improvement Plan comes in. So as I said, there's three issues we'll be working on there: behavioral health, housing, and access to healthcare. Our goal is just to be able to move the needle on this. Like, we cannot solve everything related to access to healthcare. I know at one of our meetings, folks are like, we want to see, we really are concerned about cost and want to see single-payer healthcare. Like, we are at the Rappahannock Area Health District are not, unfortunately, going to be able to solve problems related to cost quite as much.
Yeah.
But there are things that we can do to make sure, you know, people can find information that they need. We're bringing the right folks to the table. We're encouraging folks to kind of explore how they can expand in some of those areas. I will say, since we last did this, it's been really exciting to see, like, there's been so many new programs trying to train healthcare professionals across the spectrum on this. Like, High schools have expanded programs. Germanna Community College has a lot of new programs coming out. Mary Washington Healthcare has the residency program now. And I don't want to name drop every program others are working on, but there has been kind of a lot of collaboration recognizing this is an issue, and then everybody kind of trying to do their part to build on that. So we hope to see that again. If anyone's interested, we have our next meeting about that on Thursday at 11:30 a.m. at the Fix Center at Mary Washington Healthcare. Information's on our website, but that's open to the public. The more the merrier.
And you continue to have these meetings, don't you, that these meetings keep occurring?
Yeah. We, during the CHIP process, we have them about once a month. So this Thursday will really be that. It'll be kind of a strategy brainstorm. So we have our priorities now. We've been working on, you know, what are some of our goals around these? So for access to healthcare, for example, we want to continue this, you know, developing the pipeline of healthcare workforce. But that meeting gives folks a chance to be like, this is a strategy I'd like to see implemented. Or if somebody's with an organization, they can say like, this is something that we're kind of looking at doing, or maybe we've already started doing, and we really want to commit to it through this plan. This is the meeting to pull all those pieces together.
Well, this is a great meeting, Allison, too, or just even a document to bring a lot of these various people together that might not normally come together. If you're in housing and all of a sudden you're working with people you might not usually work with.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you're in public health and you're not usually working with the people in housing.
Right, same thing. Yes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really the goal. And there's been, I mean, such a positive throughout this thing has been what a strength it is that community organizations here really want to work together and have that good collaboration.
Yeah.
That's why I'm excited to hear that you've been hearing about this even, that folks want to work together and make the most of our resources that we have.
Well, I think it was in April when there was a meeting, and I had several people send me texts to say, are you going to the CHIP meeting?
Oh, great.
That's awesome.
the very first one that did it, I said, what?
Yeah.
And I've forgotten that's the acronym that's used for it. But it is. It does come up.
Yeah.
And this is something, like I say, that a lot of nonprofits use this.
Yeah.
To be able to look at their own programs.
Yeah. I mean, and we've even heard of like some businesses being established in the area that have looked at it to get an understanding of, you know, if they're giving some grant money or things that they might want to consider. So it has been really exciting to see this process grow and be something that hopefully really represents our area well.
Well, and it's another good plug to just as a reminder that even if you don't think you would, follow the Rappahannock Area Health District Facebook page, because these kind of meetings and just there's a lot of good information, health information there.
Yeah, exactly. We really encourage people to consider following us on social media or checking our, you know, website if you're not a social media person. It can be hard to share information about things like meetings like this, like when you want to cast a really wide net.
Yeah.
Social media is just honestly the best place to share that. So
follow that. Don't just think that, it's the Rappahannock Area Health District and that's just where I get shots and things like that.
Yeah.
I post every day.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to post something that of yours from just the other day.
So. Oh, awesome.
So there is good stuff there. But yeah, the community health assessment, I'm sure this is such an alive kind of document. And now it's the kind of the implementation phase.
Exactly. It's meant to be a cycle. We do this big assessment process, which is pretty intensive, and then we develop this plan, and then it's all about carrying out that plan and continuing to work on those priority areas that folks were really telling us that they want to see us working on.
Allison Baumus, John, and Jaleesa Turner here this morning from the Rappahannock Area Health District. We'll continue on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:31.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Jaleesa Turner and Allison Baumus, John with the Rappahannock Area Health District in this morning. A lot of just topics to talk about. Measles. We're starting to hear, Jaleesa, measles is back in the conversation of where you're hearing about it.
Yes, so we did have a case of measles in the area
Which, when that came out, and the health department never is specific about things. We just, you generally know things. But it was concerning. It didn't matter where it was. The fact that it was somewhere around here was got your attention. But just to see measles again, we haven't seen that in a long time.
Definitely. And, it can be a little bit scary, but we tried to be as open as we could with that case and let people know about what was happening. And
it really is a good idea. The way the health department ever gives it, I mean, it will give specific days and times where the person has been, so you can kind of get a ball. You kind of get a ballpark.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think measles is an interesting one because measles is super contagious. Like, that's the thing to know about measles. Like, when we were talking about COVID, we're expecting that, if you had COVID, you might infect like 1 to 2 people. Measles, it's like 16, 18 people we're expecting. Like, this is something that really lingers in the air. So that's why it's really important that we're putting out that messaging of like, hey, if you were at this place where there is a known measles case and you were there during these times, because it can really linger in the air, that we really want you to monitor, and we really want to know if you were vaccinated, because that's the key with measles.
Yeah.
We have a very effective vaccine and a very safe vaccine protecting against measles.
It's a good reminder that when these times come up to get vaccinated, how important that is, because you do open yourself up.
Yeah, exactly. When I say this is a strong vaccine, this is a 2-dose vaccine. You would get your first one right around 1 year of age. It's usually given kind of right around that 12-month visit for young children. And even that first dose protects, it's about 93% protection. And then with 2 doses, it's about 97%. And that's lifelong protection. So if you, as long as you got vaccinated as a child, you don't need to go get a booster. You don't need to do all these things. You're still considered protected. There is kind of this interesting caveat we can get into. If you're born before 1957, you're considered protected. And largely that's because measles was circulating so much that you probably were exposed.
Yeah.
But it can be really serious. That's why we started vaccinating in the 60s. And now that's that 2-dose vaccine that you would receive as a child that's required for entering kindergarten.
Yeah. No, it was just expected that you'd, and we haven't heard about it. So that's why it's a good reminder.
Yeah. I mean, measles was declared eliminated in the U.S. in 2000. So we are expecting that cases of this should be really rare.
Yeah.
The case here, we can't go into too many details to protect their privacy, but they had traveled internationally recently. And that's like what we're used to seeing with measles, is people might travel internationally, come back and be sick. What's happening in the conversation now, especially kind of Texas, New Mexico area, is we're just seeing these really huge numbers that we haven't seen in a long time.
So just when you see these, if you haven't been, like if you haven't been or your kids haven't been, really seriously consider it.
Yeah. I mean, we are really pushing for folks to have the MMR vaccine, as I said, really the most effective source of prevention. I know that there is, kind of some information circling out there that vitamin A can help protect. That's not really how vitamin A works. Children with severe measles might be treated with vitamin A by a healthcare provider, but it's not necessarily going to like protect you from getting it. And overuse of vitamin A can lead to toxicity. It can cause damage to the liver. So that's not necessarily like an alternative that we want to be pushing as over the counter. It's really the vaccine is the way to protect against this.
Well, and measles, because I just remember growing up and hearing about measles is a serious. You don't want to play around with that.
Yeah, exactly. I'll try to find my notes on the exact figures. But about 1 in 5 unvaccinated people in the U.S. who get measles are going to be hospitalized. So those are pretty high numbers. We estimate that as many as 1 out of every 20 children with measles is going to get pneumonia. And that's the most common cause of death from measles in young children.
Yeah.
So really something we want to look out for. I will also say, and Ted, this is like we talked about during COVID, this notion of herd immunity, but that we want folks to be vaccinated to protect those who can't get vaccinated. And that includes our really young. Like, the people who can't get vaccinated are babies between birth and age 1. And so we want more people to be vaccinated to prevent the circulation of disease so that they are not going to get sick.
I haven't heard herd mentality, you know, since, like you said, since we had those COVID discussions. Wow, yeah. it's just a flashback.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But really, when we're talking about measles, we're wanting to see 95% vaccination rates. Kindergartners in Virginia are at that level. So, you know, we're kind of hovering at that level where we would expect to see herd immunity. But really important that folks are contributing to that by staying up to date on their vaccines.
That also is a good reminder that when you talk about this is something we always talk about in the summer, about getting shots to go back to school. Some things you're required to do, but if you've got kids in school, there are certain ages where things have to be done, and to just know about that and plan for it.
Yeah, and I would say now is a great time to start planning. I don't know, maybe parents are ready to start talking about back to school as they think about their kids being home for the summer.
Could be.
But it is still a little ways off. But especially if you have a child who is going to be entering kindergarten, 7th grade, or 12th grade, there are a number of vaccines that are required. I think it is helpful to start thinking about it now, because I know at least at the health department, we schedule appointments for vaccinations, and those do fill up. And so the closer we're getting to that back to school time, the harder it's going to be to find an appointment, or find an appointment that's going to work at a time you want. Like, a lot of parents don't want to take an appointment that's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, where they have to maybe pick their kid up from daycare, take them to the doctor, take them back to daycare. So just starting to look at that now, probably going to save you some headache as back to school eventually approaches.
See, I'm a planner. I'm a high achiever. And even though it's only May, you look ahead. Because like you say, when all of a sudden there are no more dates and you can't make allowances.
Yeah. And that includes kids going back to college, too. There's some shots.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, there's one more round of shots that you get before you go to college. And I think that would be probably more of a pressing time as well, because you've got to get them to go live in your dorms and to get into college. So,
yeah.
Definitely a good reminder.
Yeah. Not quite as fun as buying the new comforter for the dorm room.
No.
XL.
need to go get your shots. But
yep.
No, all of this. And really for any age, to pay attention to things, because, like the shingles shot, I got that a few years ago, just because you start looking at things and you don't want to deal. I don't want to ever, I've known enough people and seen enough stories about something like shingles, I don't want to ever get that.
Totally, yeah.
So I'll take the two shots.
Yeah, when we talk about the side effects of vaccines, often we're talking about like a sore arm for a day.
Right.
Much, much less painful than getting some of these diseases.
Yeah. And we talk, you know, we talk about remembering COVID, it's still around.
It is.
I mean, I have a family member who right now has it. And you just... When I've told people about it, it's been, oh, I didn't know that was still a thing. It's a thing.
It's now in the rotation of cold, flu, norovirus, all of that that comes around in the winter. And there's still COVID test kits at the library that they pass out. You can get them curbside. I was doing that program when I was with the central office, and that's still alive and running now. So definitely just still be aware of that. That's out there.
Yep.
Was this a bad flu season? Because I knew some people who got really sick. It wasn't like a widespread thing.
That's a great question. I feel like I should have like the graph in my mind.
Okay.
I think norovirus was bigger than, I feel like I heard a lot more cases of that. I don't know the statistics, but I feel like that was a lot bigger this cold and flu season than cold and flu.
We can get you that data, Ted.
Okay. it just popped into my head. I wonder, because I did know some people who got really, really sick.
Same.
But it wasn't, I don't know that it was like a widespread thing, but it always, you know, again, flu shots in the fall. Start.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't think of, you know, I'm not sure what the, you know, people do die of the flu. I think we forget that. People think you're kind of just home for a few days and you feel like garbage. Yeah. But I'm not sure what the death rate was for this year. So it is something we can take a look at.
We talked a little bit earlier when we talked about the community health assessment, just about mental health. This is a mental health awareness month.
Yes, it is. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we are really excited this month to kind of drive home that we want to focus on our messaging from the CHIP that Allison was mentioning earlier, that strategy of improving access to mental health care, and particularly for those underserved populations and the ones that the CHIP identified of the aging population as well.
Well, and it's such... It's at all levels. Like when we talked earlier about you know, like you said, the aging population for kids, it's a huge thing. in families.
Absolutely. And just to go back, when some of those basic needs aren't being met that the CHIP highlighted, like housing, it's hard to worry about your yearly physical when you can't even pay your rent or your mortgage that month, or you're worried about your lights getting turned off. So it really all interconnects. And in the CHIP, I think over the statistic was about 50% of respondents identified mental health as the most pressing health issue that they have. So in May is Mental Health Awareness Month. I'm making a lot of posts about it, kind of just really bringing awareness, especially to the aging population, because I think that, as Allison mentioned, 65 and older, a lot of times, I don't want to say they're forgotten, but they're just not as prioritized as, you know, young teens or young women or young men. And I think that that's something that we really want to focus on as part of our CHIP priority.
I did a show just the other day with Spotsylvania County Schools, and they're doing something at Massaponics High School tonight.
Yes, tonight. I think it's 5:30 to 8:30. Yeah, to 7:30.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
But one of the things, if you know that you've got a family history, or you just see someone who seems to be struggling, to ask, and having an awareness month, is, especially with mental health, is a good thing.
Absolutely. And then we found that our seniors face higher risks of depression, anxiety, and isolation. And a lot of that isolation goes hand in hand with just lack of transportation and just those barriers to even get that care. They're struggling to meet their basic needs. And as we also mentioned, that digital divide, finding a way to cast a wider net of reaching their needs. There's a huge issue for their basic needs being met, and because a lot of things are going on an online avenue, as we mentioned before, online. And for 55 and older, that can be a barrier for so many of them.
Right, because most people don't. I mean, older people, a lot of times, I don't want to learn that.
Exactly.
And so I guess as far as trying to get the word out, you can't. It's so easy to reach certain segments of the population through social media, but not those that are older.
Exactly. And I think that I'll tie that into our mobile clinic, which is a thing that we're really trying to start and get going and reaching those populations that maybe don't have that access and aren't able to get out there. If we can bring an access point that's a little bit more attainable, then we can address some of those needs.
I remember when that was kind of kicked off, or the funding came and it was going to take a while to put it together. So I'm guessing it's together.
It is together. It is not currently running yet. We are kind of doing small little events right now, but we are hoping to have it out and on the ground in June. So if you see our mobile clinic on the road, say hi. But we will definitely have it available for use for community partners and for our local community members. If you've got something that an event that you think that you might want, immunizations, STIs, and
STI testing,
yes. If you're looking to get STI testing, those are all of the services that the mobile clinic will be offering, up into a women's health exam, is what we're looking at.
Well, this has got to be a great thing for the health district to be able to just to have the mobility, and like you say, to be able to go into just certain populations.
Yeah, and again, we're really tying it back to that, to our health priorities and the implementation of the CHIP, of our CHIP strategies, and this is one of them, of being able to increase that access to care. And, you know, sometimes people can't get to the health department for things. If we can have an event that's at a church parking lot, or, you know, anything that's just more accessible in a community aspect, it's really what we're looking to get out there.
Yeah, no, this will be a great thing to be able to see it and for you all to be able to implement it, just in so many areas in the community.
Yeah, we're really excited about it, and we're working out all the kinks right now so that when it is running in June, that everything will be smooth and good to go.
Looking forward to it. Jaleesa Turner here, Allison Baumus-John with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We'll take one final break and conclude this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff this morning. Rappahannock Area Health District in Allison Baumus-John and Jaleesa Turner. Jaleesa, on Facebook, you had something, and I'm going to post it today, about ticks. It is tick season, and you got to be careful.
You do. As the weather is finally, maybe not today, but as the weather is finally kind of warming up and things are nice outside, people are down by the river, and this is the perfect time of year for Lyme disease. So we encourage people to check yourselves and your animals when you come inside. Mm-hmm. It takes about 36 to 48 hours to transmit Lyme disease. So by checking yourself and your pets, you can definitely prevent that.
And say you're on one of the trails through the woods, even if it's a hot day, think about wearing, you know, long pants.
Exactly.
And a long sleeve shirt.
Long sleeve shirt. Same thing as far as your pets, just checking them, especially the long haired ones. It doesn't take much to miss a tick on yourself or your pet.
We always have to talk about ticks, and we have to talk about this, but just the whole the topic just makes me, because we've all had them, and they're it's just mm-hmm. awful.
It is. It's
they're
not
indestructible.
Fun. Yeah, they are. I've found one on my child before, and it's not a great feeling.
The other thing I said earlier about the Facebook page, that go to the Rappahannock Area Health District Facebook page, and you will find things that you don't expect, and I didn't expect to see hurricane.
Yes,
information.
It is Hurricane Preparedness Week, and you know, we are inland more, and we don't get the direct effects of hurricanes.
But we get them.
We get them, and a lot of that rain has caused flooding. I know we've had road closures often from flooding, just from the way the terrain is built. And it is important to remember to stay away from. Do not drive through those waters.
Right.
The strong winds, the downed trees, the power outages. So just really being prepared for those type of residual effects from the hurricane are going to be the most important things in order to stay safe during hurricane season.
Because we've had all kinds of remembrances around here of just the winds and losing power, and some areas have lost power for a week or so with some of these bad storms. So be prepared. One other thing, Safe Swimming Week.
Yeah, Safe Swimming Week is coming up nicely timed as we head into swimming season, which I always think of kind of kicking off around Memorial Day.
Yeah.
For those who remember last year around Memorial Day is when we had the STEC E. coli outbreak at Lake Anna. So good reminder for safe swimming. You know, and no, I think to me the reminder is like if you're swimming in open waters, like you don't know what's in there. So especially if you mm-hmm. have young children, you know, making sure they're not getting any in their mouth, showering off afterwards. Lots of tips available on the VDH website related to this. But I think using that extra caution, especially if you're swimming in lakes, ocean, rivers. And then when it comes to pools, it's kind of gross to talk about, but every year the theme of Safe Swimming Week is something about if you have had diarrhea or if you are not feeling well, don't swim. Don't get out your slip and slide. You know, this is a way a lot of things can be transmitted that are just really unpleasant. So I'll put my little plug in. We won't dig too much into that, but
we all know what you're talking about.
Yep.
Well, and especially when you talk about the Lake Anna situation or those kinds of situations, especially if you're a person with a compromised immune system, you can be in danger.
Correct. It can be really scary. I mean, some, as was the case last year, people were hospitalized because of, you know, having a fun Memorial Day weekend and swimming in the lake. Stuff was in there, it was ingested, and they did get really sick. So I think especially, yeah, as you said, if you are immunocompromised or, you know, thinking about your young children, lots of dangers around the water, even though it can be super fun, just things you want to be aware of to protect yourself and your family.
Erin Perkins isn't here this morning. If she were, this would be the time we would talk about cooking your food properly.
It sure is.
But you have to remember that during the summer too, those kinds of situations.
Yeah, cooking your food properly, and especially as temperatures heat up, just make sure if you're having a barbecue, you're not leaving it out for hours on end. You know, you're kind of in that danger zone. You want to, if your food is exposed to those warm temperatures for an extended period of time, so you want to make your food, eat your food, get it safely put away and back in the fridge.
Yep, it's so easy just to sit there and be talking or going about and then putting it hours later.
Yep.
And we always hear about those kinds of situations developing, and food poisoning is not pleasant.
No. And
never.
Something, yeah, you want to take all the steps you can to avoid
ever,
that.
Ever.
Yes.
Well, thank you both. It's great to reconnect and talk about these things, and we'll get together again soon.
That sounds great. Thank you, Ted.
Awesome. Thank you.
Jaleesa Turner, Allison Balmas-John with the Rappahannock Area Health District in this morning. Check out their Facebook page for lots of information. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.